Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican with stories from June 4th through 10th, 2020. We'll start with the article headlined Library Board Getting on Board with Online Reading by Steve Hoffman. June 10th. Allerton Public Library patrons are ready to check out books again, even if they still can't enter the Monticello-based library. Curbside delivery of materials began on June 1st, a process that featured making requests online, making an appointment, and picking up books without leaving vehicles. On Monday, June 1st, we had 49 patrons scheduled for pickup. All but two showed up. Those patrons checked out 176 items and placed 11 holds, Library Director Lisa Winters told the Library Board on June 3rd. There were some complaints, ranging from the time the process took to just wanting the building to be open, which is not allowed in this phase of the state's reopening plan in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Winters preached patience from the public as they tweak the curbside process. "I think they expected it to work more like fast food," she said, "but it just doesn't work like that." Interlibrary loans are also shut down and will likely remain so until at least August, as the Heartland Library System is asking libraries to return items they do not own to be sanitized. That means new books are difficult to come by, as shipments from booksellers are also lagging. A sanitation process is also being implemented locally. Upon return, a library asset is quarantined for 5 days. Plastic covers on books and DVDs are wiped down. Materials are backdated so that patrons are not charged overdue fees during the 5-day quarantine period, put back on the shelf pending a next hold request, and during the process, library staff are masked and gloved. Winters also asked that library customers return books only through the outside book drop and not through the curbside checkout program. Catching on to online reading. Some of the more avid readers on the library board have, by necessity, gotten up to speed on online reading. Allerton provides that service through its RB Digital, Cloud Media, and Hoopla apps. "I've used all three of them, and I love them. I'm not sure I want to go back to books," said Library Board President Sue Gortner. "I never thought I would use Hoopla because I like reading a book too much. But desperate times call for desperate measures," said board member Elaine Tracy, who has been reading on her phone. "It really works out just fine. I like a book, but this is so user-friendly," she added. For magazine enthusiasts, Winter said that RB Digital recently expanded its available offerings from 70 to 3,600. A date to reopen the building to customers has not been set, but Winter said staff are getting ready. Plexiglass shields at the checkout desk and hand sanitizer are still needed before the doors open again. Other action. In other action, the board approved its tentative budget for 2020-21, which is similar to numbers reviewed at the May meeting. Corporate personal property replacement tax is expected to drop about 30% due to the business shutdowns. That revenue source is generated by corporate profits. Even with that revenue dip, Winters expects there to be a $260,000 balance in the general library fund at the end of the fiscal year. Approved its meeting schedule, which will keep meetings at 4 p.m. on the first Monday of the month. The exception is July, when the session will be on July 8th. Approved days the library will be closed. Those are July 4th, September 7th, November 26th through 27th, December 24th through 25th, December 31st, January 1st, April 4th, May 12th, Maintenance Day, and May 31st. Chairman asks State's Attorney Assistant to step down, by Steve Hoffman, June 10th. Piatt County Board Chairman Ray Spencer ended this morning's county board meeting by asking for the resignation of State's Attorney Dana Rhodes and Assistant State's Attorney Elizabeth Dobson, saying the conflict between the board and State's Attorney's office has led to an unrepairable rift. Spencer alleged the schism has left the county without legal counsel at times. Since this is an untenable situation that must be resolved, I suggest Ms. Rhodes and Ms. Dobson resign, and Sarah Perry be allowed to begin her duties immediately, Spencer said. Perry won the Republican primary for state's attorney in March. No candidates ran on the Democratic ballot, so she will likely take office on December 1st. The state's attorney's office has filed charges against the county board in recent months. Once, to secure more funding for the Emergency Management Agency during the COVID-19 pandemic. The other, an alleged Open Meetings Act violation in May. The EMA complaint was settled, while the OMA one is still open. A Piatt County grand jury also indicted Spencer on forgery and official misconduct charges in January, but a special prosecutor was in charge of that case. In a response sent by email, Rhodes said, "It is unacceptable that Ray Spencer is indicted with felony forgery and is the one who is asking for my resignation." She also denied that she had withheld legal advice to the county board. "I have never refused to give legal advice to the county board or any department head when asked. I have never refused to review contracts when asked. I have never refused to draft ordinances when asked," said Rhodes. But she added, "There have been times she has needed to side with the people and not the board when those interests are in conflict." She said that the EMA complaint was one of those cases. "It is not the job of the state's attorney to look for loopholes or to find a way around the law so the county board can do as it wishes. I will continue to follow the law and serve the people of Piatt County," said Rhodes, who is winding down a 12-year stint as state's attorney and will pursue an opening as a judge for the 6th Judicial Circuit on this November's ballot. Spencer also noted that Rhodes has attended 56% of county board meetings since 2009, saying that seems to be at the bottom of her priority list. Rhodes said the statistic Spencer recited shows ignorance of what the state's attorney job entails. "We go to court and prosecute crimes. That is what must take priority, especially given the deep budget cuts to my office," she said. Cutbacks included the elimination of a second assistant state's attorney. Dobson issued a brief statement indicating she will not be stepping down. "I am going to decline the request of the indicted felon who remains in the chair position of the Piatt County Board to resign and abandon my professional responsibilities." For Spencer, it comes down to having legal representation after communication between the two public entities became strained after the contentious budget talks of last fall. The county can hire outside legal counsel if needed, but only with the permission of Rhodes. The county board chair said one example on the need for legal counsel is an update to the county's wind energy conversion ordinance, which he said the board will not consider until there is adequate legal input. "Until a special state's attorney is appointed or the situation changes, the board will not be taking up any issue where legal advice is required, i.e. the proposed Wind Energy Conversion System, WECS, zoning ordinance," said Spencer. The WECS update is being done in anticipation of Apex Clean Energy filing for permits to construct a wind turbine project in northern Piatt County. County board member says he will only vote present. By Steve Hoffman, June 10th. Piatt County District 3 board member Bob Murrell has vowed to vote present on all motions made at county board and committee meetings he is a part of, citing the county board's rift with the state attorney's office as his reason. Murrell said the adversarial situation leaves the county without proper representation, noting that only the state's attorney can allow the board to hire outside counsel. "The Honorable State's Attorney's Office has refused permission from the Honorable Piatt County Board to enjoy the services of outside legal representation to ensure that the Honorable Piatt County Board is in fact operating in compliance of all known laws and statutes," said Murrell at the June 3rd meeting of the County Board Building and Grounds Committee. "The County Board does not like the legal advice given by my office and has chosen to ignore it," said State's Attorney Dana Rhodes. "It is not the job of the State's Attorney to look for loopholes or to figure out a way around the law so the County Board can do as it wishes. the laws and rules are in place to protect the citizens. I will continue to follow the law and serve the people of Piatt County, she continued. Noting that the state's attorney's office has filed charges against the county board at least twice in recent months, one to increase funding for the county emergency management agency, and a more recent one claiming the board violated the Illinois Open Meetings Act, Murrell said, in an attempt to protect myself from personal liability and repeatedly threatened by the Honorable State's Attorney's Office, let it be known that until such time as a full investigation of the actions of the Honorable State's Attorney's Office into this toxic atmosphere and the unknown relationship of the Piatt County EMA Director and the Honorable State's Attorney's Office that forced the county into deficit spending, I will acknowledge being present. But without legal representation and counsel, I can vote neither yea nor nay. Murrell read his statement into the record at the Building and Grounds Committee meeting in the form of a resolution, but it was not acted on by the committee. By abstaining, voting present, Murrell is basically saying he chooses not to vote. He did so at both Buildings and Grounds and Transportation Committee meetings last week. His complete statement, as well as Rhodes' complete response, can be found at www.journal-republican.com. Full statements from Murrell and Rhodes by Steve Hoffman, June 10th. Below is the entire statement read by Piatt County Board Member Bob Murrell at the June 3rd Building and Grounds Committee meeting, outlining why he would vote present on motions at this point. A full response from Piatt County State's Attorney Dana Rhodes follows. Bob Murrell. Whereas the Honorable State's Attorney's Office has insisted that the Honorable Piatt County Board should authorize the allocation of non-existent money to fund a part-time agency in the agency within the county, and whereas the Honorable State's Attorney's Office has assumed an adversarial position on many or most of the subsequent actions taken by the Honorable Piatt County Board in the constitutional duties of the Honorable Piatt County Board, including issuing grand jury subpoenas and filing litigation against the Honorable Piatt County Board, and whereas the Honorable State's Attorney's Office has refused permission from the Honorable Piatt County Board to enjoy the services of outside legal representation to ensure that the Honorable Piatt County Board is in fact operating in compliance of all known laws and statutes, and whereas it is the opinion, my opinion, based on personal observation on the Honorable Piatt County Board, that the animosity and steady antagonism by the Honorable State's Attorney's Office directed to the PCB will undoubtedly continue in the future regarding any actions taken by this Honorable Piatt County Board, and has a strong chance of legal complaints litigated without our benefit of legal representation that must be afforded to the Honorable Piatt County Board, and whereas to the best of my knowledge, the Honorable State's Attorney's Office is still taking an adversarial position in its relationship with the Honorable Piatt County Board, then, therefore, in an attempt to protect myself from personal liability and repeatedly threatened by the Honorable State's Attorney's Office, let it be known that until such time as a full investigation of the action of the Honorable State's Attorney's Office into this toxic atmosphere and the unknown relationship of the Piatt County EMA Director and the Honorable State's Attorney's Office that forced the county into deficit spending, I will acknowledge being present at this legally scheduled meeting of the Honorable Piatt County Board. But without legal representation and counsel, I can vote neither yea or nay. Dana Rhodes. Piatt County citizens are crying out for strong leadership and are not getting it from their county board. The county board does not like the legal advice given by my office and has chosen to ignore it. This does not equate to no legal representation. It is not the job of the state's attorney to look for loopholes or to figure out a way around the law so the county board can do as it wishes. It is the job of the state's attorney to advise the county board on what it can do and cannot do legally. A board member's total abdication of all legal responsibility and grandstanding for attention shifts the county board focus away from so many other important issues that the board needs to address. the laws and rules are in place to protect the citizens. I will continue to follow the law and serve the people of Piatt County. Death notices. Sabra Elizabeth Skaggs, 97, formerly of Cerro Gordo, died Sunday, June 7th at Greencroft Healthcare. A memorial service will take place at a later date. Memorial donations may be given to the West Goshen Church of the Brethren Deacon Fund. On Friday, June 5th, Ronald E. Miller, loving husband, father, grandfather, brother, and uncle, suddenly passed away. A private family funeral will be held. Interment will be held at 11 a.m. Tuesday, June 9th, in the Monticello Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Piatt County Food Bank or the First Presbyterian Church of Monticello. Evelyn Rebecca Heacock, 100 of Monticello, passed away on June 7th at the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 13th, at the Monticello Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Piatt County Nursing Home. Gail A. Corum, 57 of Bemette, passed away on Friday, June 5th, at the Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the family is graciously abiding with the suggestions set forth. Private graveside services will be held in the Bement Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions can be made to the Gail Ann Corum Memorial Fund in care of the State Bank of Bement. Ramona May Kincaid Roll, 79 of Monticello, was called to heaven on Friday, May 29th, at Hickory Point Christian Village in Forsyth. Funeral services were held on Wednesday, June 3rd, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Broadlands. Burial took place at Pleasant Ridge Cemetery in Newman. Memorials can be made in lieu of flowers to Emmanuel Lutheran Church. Demonstration draws 500 to Courthouse Square by Steve Hoffman, June 8th. A crowd of 500 people peacefully protested on and around the Piatt County Courthouse Square in Monticello Saturday, using homegrown speakers to drive home a message of equality for all. It is not enough to put a sign in your front yard that says you are inclusive, said Monticello resident Melina Thompson, who is biracial, and outlined racism she has experienced since moving to Monticello 11 years ago, including a slur delivered by kids walking by her home and a grocery store encounter when she was asked, "What are you?" We must begin to demand inclusivity from our neighbors. This may sound trite, but people of color did not create racism, and we cannot and will not and should not be expected to dismantle the systemic racist power structure that has led to the anger being played out on Twitter, added Thompson. While noting her Piatt County residency, she also noted there is plenty of work still to be done. It's not the people, it's the system, she said, which received some of the largest applause of the day. Finney Strack, another MHS grad, gave a unique perspective of his current residence in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, where reaction to the death of George Floyd at the hands of a police officer has helped launch violent protests. For the last 10 days, I've heard nonstop police sirens to the point that they've just become white noise, said Strack. The Twin Cities have been under siege. Our people are exhausted, physically and emotionally. He noted that, amid the violence, there are also stories of people gathering each morning to clean graffiti and deliver groceries to those in need, along with a number of peaceful protests. We must do more, added Strack. Sometimes we need to have the hard conversation to get on the right path. Today, for this community, I recognize this is a hard conversation, but it's time we get on that right path. MHS football coach Cully Welter also spoke, noting that his own empathy, while well-intentioned, is not enough. At the very least, I need to vocalize my contempt for the injustice of Black people, as well as express a desire to see equal justice. And even if I do not have the perfect words or a great deal of eloquence on the subject, even if my attempts to understand may come across as uninformed, acknowledging my support is at least a step. After the rally on the courthouse square, the crowd raised their signs, began chanting, and marched around the downtown business district before concluding the rally back near the courthouse. The protest was the brainchild of Ellie Carpenter, another MHS graduate who is now a senior majoring in history at the University of Illinois. She planned it quickly, as the idea came to her on Tuesday to hold the Saturday protest. She thought the turnout and behavior of the crowd spoke well for her hometown. "I'm honestly speechless at the outpouring of support this community has shown today," said Carpenter. "It says a lot about the community, about what we honestly believe in. I think it shows everyone in Monticello that we have a voice, and now that we have a platform for that voice, we are going to keep using it." She said she would continue the advocacy effort by providing resources online, including places where donations can be made to various causes and contact information for government representatives. There were few disruptions of the gathering, the longest being to attend to a medical need of one of the attenders. The sound of firecrackers close by also got the crowd's attention, and police asked a second-floor resident to turn down loud music that began blaring at one point during speeches. Police officers from throughout Piatt County and the area were on hand at the demonstration. No new COVID-19 cases reported in Bi-County area. By Steve Hoffman, June 8th. In his weekly report released Monday morning, DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Department Administrator David Remmert said no new COVID-19 cases had been recorded in either county over the previous week. "This past week, we were notified of 141 additional tests processed in the DeWitt and Piatt County areas. No additional positive results were found. Statewide numbers of positive cases and deaths also are continuing to decline," said Remmert. The most recent testing numbers: DeWitt County, 609 people tested, 603 tests have been negative, 2 test results pending, 4 positive cases, all are recovered. Piatt County, 744 people tested, 734 tests have been negative, 0 test results pending, 10 positive cases, all are considered recovered. DeWitt County's last positive test was announced on May 12th, Piatt County's on May 26th. There have been no COVID-19-related deaths reported in either county. Macon County Speedway to open Saturday. By Steve Hoffman, June 9th. Racing action is set to return this coming Friday and Saturday, June 12th through 13th, to a pair of Central Illinois tracks. Lincoln Speedway, located in Lincoln, will open the 2020 season on Friday night, while Macon Speedway, located in Macon, will open up on Saturday evening. Both tracks will use extra precautionary measures when it comes to the health and safety of its customers. Both tracks have been shut down as far as actual racing is concerned due to COVID-19 and the guidelines that come with it. Promoters from the two tracks have been hosting races in neighboring states over recent weeks, utilizing social distancing guidelines and extra sanitary measures with great success. Those will be put in place for this weekend's events. In addition to limiting capacity with headcount numbers, attendees are encouraged to wear masks, bring hand sanitizer, and utilize the 6-foot social distancing recommendation as much as possible. Temperature checks and health screenings will be held upon arrival for fans and competitors. At Lincoln Speedway Friday, Dirt Car Pro Late Models modifies New Tech Seed DII Midgets and Hornets will be in action. Macon Speedway will play host on Saturday to the Dirt Car Pro Late Models, BillingsleyRewards.com Modifieds, Neil Tire and Auto Pro Mods, Archer's Alley Street Stocks, Sportsman, Hornets, and Micros by Bailey Chassis. Pits will open both days at 3 p.m., hot laps at 6 p.m., and racing action at 7 p.m. General admission tickets will be available at the gate, with kids 11 and under free. For more information on Lincoln Speedway, visit www.lincolnspeedwayil.com, or for Macon Speedway, www.maconracing.com. Farmer City still closed. According to its Facebook site, the Farmer City Raceway will not open this weekend, but is making plans to open soon. Cars are being allowed to practice at the track on Saturday. Those wishing to do so should message raceway officials first through the Facebook site. Calkins asks for extension on dicamba use. June 5th. State Representative Dan Calkins, Republican of Decatur, is requesting the Illinois Department of Agriculture, IDOA, to extend the deadline allowed for farmers to use the pesticide dicamba if permitted by federal court. The U.S. Court of Appeals ruled dicamba illegal for use as of June 3, 2020, 17 days ahead of the deadline for farmers to apply the pesticide used by most farmers in Illinois. According to Representative Calkins, the last couple of years have been rough for farmers. With trade wars, low crop prices, and low production, this is another blow to the ag industry. It's ridiculous to have this pesticide taken away after it has already been paid for, and there is not a reliable alternative at this time. Many farmers choose to plant crops that are dicamba resistant, a product that has been utilized by farmers for over 50 years. Dicamba is one of several tools used by farmers today. I am advocating for farmers to be able to use this product until the issue gets resolved. That's why I have requested the state to extend the deadline for farmers to use dicamba if the federal government extends the time frame. If the federal court ends up allowing the use of dicamba for a specific period, then our state needs to extend the deadline for farmers past June 20th, as 15 days does not provide ample time for farmers to use this product to protect their crops. Before the ruling was made by the U.S. Court of Appeals, the Illinois Department of Agriculture allowed the use of dicamba until June 20th, 2020. Calkins added, "It's critical for farmers that choose to use dicamba but are allowed to use it on their crops this year due to the fact their crop is resistant to dicamba," said Representative Calkins. "Otherwise, our nation's food supply will be put at risk because farmers will end up harvesting fewer crops this fall." Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. This has been Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading stories from June 4th to June 10th. Please stay well. I look forward to reading with you again soon.